You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. If you're watching, and I tend to look shittier than normal, if you're listening and I sound shittier than normal, it's because I got COVID. Yeah, that's right, folks. I was vaccinated, and I still got COVID. But let me tell you about, there's this discrepancy. There's this notion that, wait a minute, you get vaccinated, you shouldn't get, that's not how it goes. It cuts down the severity. So if you get vaccinated and you get sick, you get COVID, you won't have to go to the hospital. You won't have as worse of problems as you would if you weren't vaccinated. So all I'm saying is that it was shit, dude. It was a tough week. I got it. Somehow I got it. And I'm doing better. So thank you for all the messages. It is no fun. All I could tell you is please get vaccinated. I don't care what your theories are. I don't care what you believe. I got COVID and I'm telling you, get vaccinated. That's all I'm going to talk to you about that. You could do what you want. All right. But it is fucking brutal. Great guest today, Mr. Chris Sullivan. I'm very excited about Chris Sullivan. This is us, Guardians of the Galaxy. He and I did a show a year ago, a podcast together. And it's so great having him back. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. He had a baby and there's just so much fun to talk about. So let's do that. And hey, I couldn't do the Stage It this last weekend because I was sick. But this coming Saturday, Rob and I will be doing a Stage It. We will be doing our Stage It. Just go to stageit.com. Our band Sunspin will be playing two shows, 2 p.m., 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Very excited about that. Sorry we had to cancel for a week, but I just felt like shit. So stick around. Lots to talk about after the show. But why don't we just jump into it? Let's get inside of Chris Sullivan.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I got a little teary-eyed when you walked in. Yeah. I just forgot how much I liked you.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Because we're pretty comfortable isolating.
Yes.
And a lot of times for me, I'm like, it's just as easy for me to be like, you know what? I'll just stay home. I'm just going to stay home.
I know.
And
at least you have a wife and you have a kid. So you have reason to do so.
Reason, but also excuse.
Oh,
to do so. You know what I mean?
It like, feels like an excuse.
No, but it can't. Somebody said, you know, when you have a kid, you tend to miss out on some things that you want to do, but you also have an excuse to not do all those things you don't want to do. Can't do it, man. The kid, I have to stay home.
People immediately understand that.
And you compound that with the last year's global pandemic. Did you hear about this?
Oh, I heard about that one.
And Rachel and I would never have to leave home ever again, which has been really, you know, it's been nice. And it's good to get a call from you and say, hey, come visit. And to be like, absolutely, that's exactly what I want to do.
So you need that. So, you know, well, the first thing I want to say is we have a segment called, you know, it's a mental health check-in called How You Doing?
Perfect. It's perfectly titled.
There's a jingle coming. Here it comes.
How you doing?
And it's just kind of like, how are you feeling at this moment? How are you feeling in the last week? I mean, you know, because I know we go through anxiety and we deal with a lot of stuff and you've got a lot of things, piling up here.
Yeah, I feel great.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear that because I thought, you know, because there's so much I want to talk to you about that I...
On the way over here, I had one question for you. I said, you know, it's been a year since we've seen each other. It has been almost exactly 1 year.
That's just too much. And I feel bad about that. I feel terrible about that.
What are we going to do?
This
is the thing that we were, the world put us in that position and that's the way it is. But the one thing I want to know from you is what you've learned in the last year. What have you learned in the last year? We don't have to get into it right now. I'm just saying.
We'll get
into
it.
Like, this is what I was wondering as I was driving. I bet Michael has learned some incredible things in this last year.
Oof. I have. I mean, look, when you're forced to be by yourself, and, you know, with the exception of like, you know, another person that I would hang out with who we did an album together, which kept me going. It was some kind of like incentive to get out of bed, some kind of, but you need more than that. So I made an album, and that was really exciting. It kept me busy, but like not being able to hug people, not being able to see people for the most part, you know, and everybody dealt with this, and a lot of people dealt with death and sickness and all this. And I dealt with some death. I mean, you know, my grandfather died right before the pandemic. Then my sister passed away last fall, and then my dog just died. You know, so I've had some things.
My God, man.
But
I didn't know all this.
You know what? You know what's weird is, you know, I don't really share it too much. I mean, I share it on the podcast a little bit, but surprisingly, I was scared of how I dealt with it because I dealt with it pretty well. And I don't know if it's medication. Hey. I don't know what it is, but like, I don't know if it's, you know, my sister was sick for a long time. So I think I was mourning her throughout the years. My grandfather had Alzheimer's for years. So I was mourning him over the years.
Sure.
My dog was sick for a long time. It wasn't a sudden death.
Yeah.
And I think that I dealt with it pretty good, but I still sometimes really want to cry. And I feel like I don't cry enough. Like I really want to get it out. And I did this breathing exercise. This woman came over the other day and it was breath work and I hadn't done it. It's these things where it's like,
oh yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. She goes, listen, we're going to do this for 18 minutes straight. I go, you're fuck off. I cannot do this for 18 minutes. And my hands got numb and she goes, this is all normal. And then all of a sudden I start getting emotional.
Yeah.
And it was really weird. And I think it helped me. So I said, I want to see you again. It was a friend's wife and she came over, but it's those things that I think I need to do that would sort of connect myself to the things, to loss, to the things that I've dealt with. And I think because if you just bottle it up, I feel like you need some release.
Grief is a very interesting topic in our American culture. We don't value it the same way other cultures do. We don't put an importance on grieving the way a lot of other cultures do. And it leaves a lot of us feeling like what you're talking, feeling that feeling of I've skipped a step here.
Yeah. What's going on?
I've missed something. There's an important part of this process that I haven't gone through yet.
That's it.
And it'll come.
Have you dealt with a lot of death?
I haven't.
You haven't. You have your mother and father.
I had one grandparent until I was, one grandparent left when I was born. They had all passed before I was born. And so I've only dealt with the passing of one grandparent. I've dealt with a lot of death in the last year, you know, as far as people passing from COVID.
Yeah.
But nothing immediate in my life.
Does that scare you? Because it scares me when, you know, oh my God, I can't imagine losing my, you know, and I'm not incredibly close. I love my parents, but like I would go nuts if I lost any sibling or any family member. And that's like, I'm getting to the age where it's like shit starts to happen. You hear people die in their 50s, they die in their 60s.
Sure. In a lot of my contemplative practice in my meditation or my prayer, I actually do imagine that. I spend time imagining what it will be like or what it would be like.
Almost pre-grieving.
Pre-grieving, but also front-loading my gratitude and front-loading my my approach to the relationship with these people. You know, if I've spent enough time wondering what my life would be like without my mother, my father, my wife, my son, which I have spent very little time delving into that. But, you know, we recently learned of somebody who had lost their son and to imagine that and to grieve in a way, improves my life so much because when I see this person, my heart is just, when I see you, you know, to go a year without seeing you and then to see you, you know, the gratitude rushes back in. I open the front door and I hear you upstairs playing the guitar and singing. And I'm just like,
I didn't even know you were here.
Well, the door was unlocked.
You're always welcome to walk in, but I didn't, I was playing guitar and I was just feeling it and playing another song.
Like, and my heart just, My heart leapt for you, my friend.
Because we would get together before we did our old podcast together, and we'd play music, and right. we'd play a song, I'd play a song, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So that's how I'm doing. I'm doing all right. It's been a contemplative year. It has been a good year because Rachel, we started the pandemic on vacation. We were literally on vacation, had to come home. Rachel was 6 months pregnant. We spent the last 3 months of her pregnancy in quarantine. We spent the first 6 months of 3 or 4 months of Bear's life in quarantine. Then I went back to work on This Is Us, and we managed to navigate an entire season of television with nobody getting sick in our cast or crew, which was, statistically incredible. Yeah. And so it's been a real, like, Rachel and I have really had to turn towards each other because every time we turn around, there we are. Like, okay, so what are we going to do with this time? And how are we going to push through maybe some of the sticking points, you know, of our relationship? And it's been really, really fucking hard. And really beneficial.
I'm shocked. It's not that I was hoping you'd come in here and you'd say, fuck, oh my. But I thought, you know, I know Chris and, you know, he gets anxiety. Mm-hmm. He deals with, he has this, you know, he has an anxiousness that I have, and he deals with certain demons. And then I go, well, add into the equation a new baby boy add into the equation. The show This Is Us just was canceled.
Well, not canceled. It's always been.
Well, they've been saying cancel, but it just hasn't. It's
end
just
of season six is always.
So next year's this. Yeah, right.
The next season will be the last season. And that is where Dan Fogelman has always wanted to end.
So you always knew this show was going to end after six seasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I believe you.
No.
He says that. But as a creator, you can only go so far because the studio might jump in and say, no, we want another season.
Oh,
so
sure.
You probably were thinking that we're going to get another season, even if he doesn't want it.
Maybe we were hoping.
Right.
Or maybe I thought it was the greatest negotiating tactic of all time on Dan's part at season three being like, no, I only want to do six.
It's a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Because he's told us the ending of this show. We know the ending.
You know the ending.
We know how the ending.
Do people die?
I mean, everyone dies, Michael.
That's an ambiguous answer.
Well, I mean, but that's the kind of the point of the show is it goes back and forth in time to show you a time before people are born and a time after people are dead. And the fact that the world continues and these relationships continue. And I know this, we've already shot scenes from the final episode.
Did you cry?
I wasn't part of them, but the production has captured scenes for the final episode.
Did people cry?
People cried. Yeah,
people cried.
People always cry. It's This Is Us.
Will you cry? You're not done filming.
No, we have a whole another season.
You have a whole another season to shoot.
Yeah, to shoot.
Oh well, fuck. I mean, then that's not cancellation. That's a whole season to go here.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying.
How many episodes?
18 more to go.
18 more to go. Do you already start thinking about your next job?
You know what I do. Yes, there are things I'm trying to put into the lineup for a year and a half from now. But as you know, that is always a guessing game. But I do know this: I've never been sentimental for the ending of things because it doesn't ever feel like an ending. You know, it doesn't like the ending of our podcast. I was like, okay. This only means that things are about to evolve.
Right.
Into something bigger.
And we'll work together in something.
And look, this podcast room is now a full-blown production studio. And your podcast went to the next level. And obviously I had a child and I've been that way since high school. You know, the theater production ends and all the kids gather around and they cry and they're so sad.
You don't get like that.
I don't know why. It's not that I
get like that too. I always want things to end. My thing is I want things to end, which is not a good thing.
Right.
I have good things happen to me and I'm like, I wish it's the whole actor thing. It's like, I just want a job. I have a job. When do I have off? When do I, you know, when do I have off? When is the show going to end? Okay. We've done it. And I always feel like, I think it was with my ADD. It's like after I do a pilot episode, I'm like, God, that was great. I'm good. You have a whole season left.
Right.
Really?
There's a creative side of what we do, obviously, and then there's a business side, right? And you and I are, it's hard for a lot of people to understand, like I am my product, right? I am what I am selling. to a TV show, to a movie, to a whatever, I say to a production, here's the value I bring to your product.
Right.
And then the creative work is something that happens kind of in another section of my brain. But for this wonderful thing like This Is Us to happen to the cast and to the creators and to myself, in order for it to mean anything, it has to end. Like in order for me to take this wonderful occurrence in my life out into the world and parlay it into more creative collaboration and more creative challenge, it has to end.
That's a very positive. Ryan, put the microphone to your mouth, for God's sakes.
Writing that down. Hold on, that was good.
What do you think about that?
I think that's great. I mean, jeez. I haven't really thought about it like that.
Do you think like you know, everything has to end? Do you have a healthy attitude like that? Or do you have the approach where you're like, I don't want this to end. I'll be devastated if it ends. I need this to continue.
I mean, I think having a sense of finality is definitely preferred for me. Because I like having things done so then I can move on to the next thing so that it is not just sort of hanging there. And then you sort of know, okay, that thing is done. And now it's the next. I mean, it applies to like work for me. Even day to day activities. Like, I just need the thing to be done so then I can do the next thing and the next thing. And I can't do the next thing until that first thing is done.
Because it is the reality of everything ends.
Right.
So understanding that is only beneficial for me.
You know, I think the most important thing is, and I struggle with this, is just enjoying the time you have before it ends. Yeah. There's the beginning, and then there's enjoyment, and then there's the end. And then it's sort of like, God, I was shitting on the, you know, my old therapist who I fired. Can you fire a therapist?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember he stood up, like he was standing up, like he was taking a piss. And he goes, you got one foot in the past. Your right foot's here in the present and you're pissing on the future. Or no, you got one foot in the past, one foot in the future, and you're pissing on the present. Mm-hmm. And he had his, you know, showing you like now analogically.
And he pulled his pants down.
He didn't pull his pants down. That would have been appropriate.
And you're like, that's it, you're fired.
Although for him, it might have been appropriate because that was the kind of guy where I'm sitting there and he's eating a Subway sandwich and he's just devouring. And he's, do you mind if I eat? I'm like, yeah, it's my hour. I'm paying you a lot of money. And he's like, oh, I didn't say that. I was like, yeah, sure. He's like, okay. Yeah.
Well, this is over Zoom or is this?
No, this was years ago. I let him go after that. Yeah. I felt like, you know what? We're too comfortable. He's too comfortable. I'm uncomfortable. This is not comfortable.
Yeah. You're shitting with the bathroom door open now.
Yeah. But do you enjoy the moment? Are you going on set every day and enjoying the days?
I have gotten better at it and I've gotten much better at it since Bear arrived.
Bear, your son, Bear Sullivan.
My son, Bear Sullivan.
What's his middle name?
Maxwell.
Bear Maxwell.
I was kind of lobbying for Maximus, but it was too.
Bear Sullivan.
Yeah.
I think of like, this is comes to mind. And starting linebacker number 32, Bear Maxwell, the 265-foot, 6'5" senior from... You know,
absolutely.
Is he big for his age?
He's 10 months old and he's wearing 18 month clothing, so he's very large for his age. But the since he has arrived, all the paradigms have shifted in an instant, and it's been very difficult to realign and to ground myself in the new reality that is. Everything. And that includes my work. And I haven't figured out how to express this yet. I keep talking to people about it, hoping that each time I talk about it, it will coalesce in my brain as a coherent idea. But I just don't care about anything else anymore.
Really? It's Bear. And then there's a big something in between and then everything else.
There is my relationship with Rachel. There is my love for Bear.
Really, and Bear then, doesn't exceed Rachel?
No, I don't. I don't.
That's a tough one. They're both equals.
It is a tough one, but I also, I think it's important for Bear as he grows up to see that my love for Rachel is the reason for his existence. You know, is the foundation of everything. But what I mean is, and when I say I don't care, it sounds negative. It's just the importance of these other things in my life have fallen away. And the anxiety around showing up for a big scene is gone. And what has happened is I can just show up for the big scene.
Really?
It's been insane, Michael. That anxiety that we used to talk about is just not there.
Because Bear is the most important thing to you, this creature, this thing that you created with Rachel. And all of a sudden, you're telling me this little child brings you so much joy and importance that everything else seems not trivial, but just right. not less important.
See, this is the thing. I don't know how to explain. It's not that things become trivial. It's not that they're unimportant. It's not that I don't care. It's the anxiety that I used to put on them, the narcissistic anxiety that I used to put on other things, on events, on my work, on what other people think of me. It has just
evaporated,
melted away.
Really?
And for the first time in my life, I've been able to actually maybe look at my work this last season and say, I think that's some of the best work I've done on this show. And feel confident and comfortable talking about viewing my own work, looking at it and going, wow, you did a good job. That was good, Chris. You know what I mean? Like yeah. I normally have a lot of criticism. I have, and it's not even negativity. It's just analytical. Okay, look at that. See the way you did when the camera is on that side and below your eye level, you need to be
hyper-focused on things that aren't really that important and are just causing you anxiety.
Right.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
But you know what's funny is this conversation right now, I feel a little narcissistic because I feel like I'm thinking about me and I'm thinking subliminally, are you telling me to have a child? Is that what you're getting at?
No.
I mean, but no. Look, look, Pete, my grandmother always says, she goes, Mikey, you'd be such a great father. You're so good with kids. And you know, I think once you, my grandfather used to tell me, it makes me sad that he never got to see me as a dad. But, and I don't know if I'm going to be a dad, but he's like, you know, family's the most important thing in the world. Mm-hmm. Once you have a family, Mike, everything else just, it doesn't matter. Your family is the most important thing. And my grandma, you would be such a, and I think, wow. And so I was in those stages where I wanted a kid. And then I was stages where I, you know, what the fuck? I can't even take care of myself. And then I thought, you know, maybe having a kid would really just, there's that kid becomes the center of attention. That's your main focus. And maybe that's sort of what you need, not to have a kid as a test to see, right. Well, that didn't work. Sorry, buddy. Right. I'm still the center of attention. Sorry, go get yourself a beer. You know, it's not like that, but you know, I'm starting to think if I do meet the right person, if I have the right thing, you know, maybe if that works out, because you and Rachel had a strong bond, mm-hmm. and you've been through thick and thin, and I know mm-hmm. you went through ups and downs, and yeah. kind of like that's a relationship, and then you get it together, and then you have this child, and that's a great thing, and that doesn't always happen. Usually, it's either a lot of times it's an accident, or I'm getting older, I need to have a baby, and right. it's with the wrong person, right?
Right.
So I don't know. Now it occurs to me that maybe it could be a good thing for me, actually, family.
Let's put it this way. It is a surefire way. Well, that's not even true. It was a surefire way for me to enter the second half of life. You know, the first half of life I spent building up this persona and this ego and this container. And now I've entered a section of my life where I figure out what goes in that container, what I want to fill it with, what the purpose is for myself. What type of impact do I want to have on the world around me? And what type of values do I want to instill and pass along to this new person who is going to have his own path and his own struggles and his own pain and his own anxieties. And can I die into myself enough? Can I kill my ego enough to get out of the way and help be an emotional coach or an emotional support,
a mentor
for this new being?
Now, look, yeah, you're making it sound like, look, obviously this is fantastic, but you'd be kidding yourself not to say it can't be easy.
I mean, so far it's pretty easy because he doesn't communicate yet. So
that's gotta be the hardest thing. I wish I knew what you wanted. What's the matter? Why are you crying?
Well, when he cries, it's very, it's very brief.
Okay. You're lucky. You're one of those parents first kid and they're an angel and they have a second kid and it's Damien from The Omen.
Of course. And he, let's put it this way. He can't speak yet, but he does communicate very well. He fusses when he needs something. And usually he only needs one of three things, you know, food, sleep, or a new set of clothes. And that's easy. That part's easy. So what has been difficult is Bear requires my constant attention when he is not sleeping, even when he's sleeping, which means that whatever I'm doing, you know, worrying about the future, regretting the past, running around, busying myself, I'm constantly being brought back to the present moment.
That ceases. That's done. That
doesn't cease. It fires, you know, AC/DC, alternate current. Okay, I can focus on it. Now I'm immediately brought back to the moment.
Is that frustrating?
It was at first because I would get frustrated with myself. I would get impatient. And then I just realized, aha, this moment, this is all there is this moment. And so Bear is just here reminding me of that. Come back, come back, come back, come back to this moment. Come back to now. Okay. Yeah. Take care of that and then come back. You can worry for a second. My mind can wander for a minute, but there's this child, you know, and it, at first it was frustrating. And then I just realized where else could I go? Where else do I want to be than right here?
Right.
You know, that's been a big part of the paradigm shift is, you know, when you call and you say, hey, come over to the house, hang out, let's do a podcast. I have to think to myself, is that 2 hours that I want to spend away from Bear?
Wow.
Like,
so the answer was yes.
The answer was yes. is this going to feed me in a way that makes it valuable enough to be away from Bear?
Sure.
You know?
And it's healthy you still have to do things. You go to work, you do this. There's still, if you thought for a second, I'm not spending enough time with my child, you wouldn't be here.
That's right. And the lesson that I learned over the pandemic, I don't know about you, but during the pandemic, I was busier than I'd ever been.
Right.
At home, you know, because everybody knew you're at home.
Right.
You're not going anywhere. I know you don't have anything to do. So would you mind hosting this virtual gala for my charity? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And of course, I want to engage with the world. I want to be helpful. I want to be of service. But I was saying yes to everything.
Really?
Yeah. And I realized,
because you're a good guy.
Well, yes.
Mostly. I mean, you are a good guy.
I try to be. But what I did realize is that sometimes I was doing things that were outside of my Jason.
Voorhees.
Yeah. That was for those
people
not watching. Yeah. I just elbowed Jason in the face.
Yes.
You know, I was.
I'd have to get rid of this shit, by the way, if I had a child. I have all these horror movies, Jason Voorhees' head. I can keep the seat there.
I don't know. We've talked about the horror. There are valuable lessons in horror movies.
Yeah, sure.
I was committing to things that I didn't have the energy for. And so by the time I was doing them, I was already resenting them. And that's not the way I should move through this world.
Right.
And if I have committed to something, I need to get my head on straight and take care of my own resentments and move through it, you know, present in the moment, bringing all of the energy that I have, you know, come over here and what, lay around on the couch? You know, I'm not, what's his name?
Who?
Your last guest who's just laying around.
Oh, Joel McHale. Yeah. Well, I don't know if he'd be last guest, but Joel McHale did lie around.
I'm kidding.
No, he's a big guy. And I asked Chris, I said, Chris, you know, feel free to lie there. And then, you know, of course, Ryan would have to sit on a stool.
Yeah.
And which is fine, but not good for his ass.
In the corner,
nobody puts Ryan in the stool.
Yeah.
My ass appreciates it.
Yeah. But, you know, you invite me over and I want to show up and be here.
Right. But what you're talking about with Bear, isn't it an analogy for life? Imagine just every situation is Bear. Mm-hmm. Like if I organize a softball thing on Sunday, go for 2 hours and play softball and give softball and your friends attention
right.
for 2 hours.
Right.
And then go off and do something else. But everything you do should have that sort of attention. Your work, your love life,
the dishes. It doesn't
just
matter.
Just be in the moment. That is the key to what we have been talking about from our last podcast that we did to this podcast to somehow just being in the moment. And that is very hard for me. I'm almost ahead of myself and I'm working on that.
Mm-hmm.
And
what I'm saying is the only thing I have ever come across that brings me back into the moment without fail every time is Bear.
See, and that didn't happen before. You didn't have that thing to bring you back.
I had to work really hard. I had to work really hard.
Do you work as hard? Do you think everybody on that show, obviously you're going to say yes, everybody works hard. Everybody has different work ethics when you're doing this as us. Do you see that some people are just so, like there's some people that are the method that just, you know, you don't want to be around them because they're just so hyper-focused. They need to stay in the moment the whole day. They're just, and then there are other people who are just like, anyway, oh my gosh, Chrissy, your voice is, you know, do you, are there people on the set like that? Everybody's different.
I mean, it depends on the day. You know, I have a good deal of respect for what's going on that day. There are certain days that are much heavier than others.
Right.
You know, and I can be the same way. If I know at the end of this day, I'm going to have a panic attack, nervous breakdown on camera, I'm not going to be goofing around all day the way I normally would.
Right.
You know,
you need to have some, you have to preserve that energy.
Preserve the energy, kind of focus the mind. It doesn't mean that I need to be, and I've learned this because it doesn't mean I can be rude to other people. It doesn't mean I can be snippy with other people. And I've let those things bleed over in the past where I'm so focused on my work and somebody comes up and asks,
what?
I get short,
right.
and that's inappropriate. Everyone on our show is very good about being present for the work that they have to do and letting it go when it's done.
And being respectful to each other.
Yeah. There are certain people who everyone works, like you said, everyone works very hard. Some people make it look a lot easier. Justin Hartley is the most effortless actor.
Fuck. I love him. You fuck effortless fuck you are.
He's the most effortless actor I've seen. And I'm sure that the wheels are turning and I know he puts the work in and I know he has his, you know, routines or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But when he shows up, it is the most effortless thing I've ever seen.
You know who I think is probably the most intense and he's such a great actor. And it's a good thing, but I picture Sterling.
Oh yeah.
Being very like, hey, I love you all, but don't fuck with me.
He doesn't even have to say that. He is focused and he is a technician when it comes to emotion. Like we've talked about, if the camera's on the left, all right, I'll make sure the tear comes out the left eye. You know, like
really, he could do that.
I don't know if he can do that. It certainly appears that way. It's like, it's crazy to me.
Wow.
And he shows up and he brings the energy to the set. He is amped up. He is ready to go. And The best thing about our set is that nobody has to say stuff like that. Everybody gets it.
Who has it the toughest? Who do you think has
Mandy,
the...
Mandy.
Mandy has it the toughest. Mandy Why?
Has it because Mandy has played everything from her as herself from 16 years old to 90. And she spans every generation of this TV show. So she is on set more than anyone.
And she's emotional a lot.
She's in every timeline. She has to play most often a 65, 67-year-old woman. Oof. And she does an incredible job. She is the most overlooked person on our show because she is so ever-present, I think. I think her lack of nominations for awards and things boggles my mind because the work she's doing is better than anything else on network television right now.
Wow.
It's insane. And her level of emotionality.
Is she upset by that? Do you think she gets upset by that?
I think she would. We all would like the recognition emotionally, spiritually, whatever it is
for the work that we're doing sometimes.
Well, but also like we were talking about, you know, that type of recognition, ups our value for the business side of this job. So nominations and awards.
Right, because you were nominated for an Emmy.
I was.
Dinklage! Dinklage! Dinklage beat him. That son of a bee.
But those things add to your value in this industry. So in order to do 6 years, Mandy, to do six seasons of some of the best acting I've seen on TV, you know, she wants that to roll over into other things and she'll be fine. She's an incredible actor, an incredible singer, but she definitely has it the hardest on our show.
Who cries the most?
Chrissy.
Chrissy cries the most. Yeah. And she's a good crier.
She's a very good crier. She has the thing that makes her such a brilliant actor is that she has access. Her emotions are on call. Like they are right below the surface. So if she needs them, they're ready.
Right.
And I can't say that for myself. Like I have, like I said, I spend.
How do you work into an emotional scene where you have to cry? Do you constantly think or dwell on like, fuck, I've got to cry. Give me glycerin. Give me glycerin, spray glycerin in my eyes. I've done glycerin in my eyes before. I don't give a shit.
I've done it all. I've only had to do it once on This Is Us.
Right.
It happened spontaneously a second time. And then the rest of the time, I've kind of made the choice not to for that not to be a path for me. Chrissy has that path, that emotional level. Sterling has that emotional level. We can't all be crying, you know.
Right, yeah, but you like, all are.
But you know, all cry. But you know what I mean. Like so I've avoided it, probably, mostly for my own comfort. Comfort level and ease.
But. Yeah, it's gotta be when you see a scene where like I gotta get emotional, I gotta get a cry. Is it kind of like fuck?
Yeah. I mean,
it's work. You know, it's extra work.
It's gonna be a long day. It's gonna be a long day, and it's not fun.
And how long do you shoot like a scene before you get it? Usually, do they really just milk it?
I mean, it's TV. It's network TV. We're moving. You know, you've done it.
So, but you're doing 3 or 4 hours a scene at least.
Yeah,
4 hours a scene.
Yeah.
So you're going to do a close up, a mid shot, a wide shot, their coverage.
That's the other thing. Yeah. If you have to be emotional, can you do it 15 times?
And by the way, do you prefer doing an emotional scene with the camera having it on you at first, just so you don't lose that?
It's been. Yeah, probably.
That's better because at the end you're giving everything and then you turn around and you'd get nothing left.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to you?
Yes. Early on when I didn't quite realize the structure of television, I realized, oh, well. I gave everything I had, you know, while the camera was pointed at that.
Oh my God. I gave everything. And then they go, oh God, Michael, what a great performance. That's the camera's not on you.
Yeah.
And then they turn around. I'm like, I don't know, guys. I don't even know the lines anymore. I don't know what I'm doing. And they're like, what happened to him? I don't know. That's happened before. I used to be the guy that they go, we've got 30 minutes left. You know, we'll turn around Rosenbaum for the last 10 minutes for his close up. And he's got all the dialogue. He'll do it. He'll be a professional. And I get so upset. I'm like, I'm stressing my ass out because you're going to turn around on me at the end of the night when we're all going home at like 11 at night or 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
And they would turn around on me and Tom would be like, hey, you need me? I'm like, yes, stay here.
Thank you.
Do you want to do something funnier, lighter? Do you want to do something like the Nick? Something. What is it you would like to do if you had the choice to do it after the show?
I'd love to get into some straight comedy.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's been a long time.
Well, I got a show I'm working on
here. Oh, how about that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I got the role just for you. You're going to play the Mandroid. That's the character.
I'm in. I'm ready.
I'm in.
I don't care what the rest of it is. That sounds great.
That sounds just wonderful. Yeah. I know you're doing tons of music. Are you still working with Taylor Goldsmith from Dawes?
Yeah, I mean, we released that record halfway through the pandemic. You know, you were in the same boat. Congratulations on birthing that, by the way.
Yes, Joseph the Spouse, though, the album's awesome. Yeah. And thank you, and thank you. And by the way, he's a big Dawes fan.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Huge. They're incredible.
Because I said, you know, he's working with Tyler. He goes, Taylor Goldsmith? I go, yes. From Dawes, you knew.
Yeah. I love the way he writes. I really love like the, because it almost feels like punchlines in a way, but like they're just like really he really sets it up, and then like the final rhyme is like, oh Jesus, dude.
Yeah, he is one of the great living American singer-songwriters, and when I first met him
through Mandy, right?
Yeah, they were just dating, and it was early on in season one or two of This Is Us. And he said, I got this band called Dawes, and I don't know how this band escaped me up until 4 years ago. But I went home and I bought
all their albums,
every single album, and listened to them in chronological order, and would text him as I was listening to songs when something would come to me and I'd have a question. I'd be, okay, track four, your second album. And it was that writing style that you're talking about, Ryan, that a bell went off for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy listens to a lot of John Prine. And I just knew it. And I texted him. I said, you listen to a lot of John Prine, don't you? He said, yeah. How'd you know? I said, because of this lyric. And it was one of these punchline, really intelligent, witty.
It's like a little bit of everything is that one song where it's like, he's telling three different stories.
Right.
And I think the best line he'd ever written was, things happen. That's all they ever do.
Right.
That blew my fucking mind.
Yeah. Things happen. That's all they ever do.
It's so simple, isn't it?
And it's so witty and it's so heartfelt.
It's not trying that hard.
And it's not trying that hard.
That's the thing.
And so one day I was writing a song, and the opening verse sounded just like a John Prine song. And I texted it to him. I played it and sang it, and I texted it to him, and I said, you want to write a John Prine song? And he texted back the first half of the first chorus. And then I texted back the second verse. And then he did the second half of the second verse. And over 2 days, we had written this song over text message that was 100%.
And you put it together probably and sent it back to him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And like, this is, let's do this.
Yeah. And we had such a good time. We wrote, you know, five or six more. And then I had a couple that I had already written with other friends, and we put an album together, and we were playing shows around Los Angeles, you know, a year and a half ago when the world shut down. And so we were going to, in the hiatus between seasons, I was planning a tour. We were going to go play shows, and none of that happened. So, so we finally just released the record and let people have a listen, and it, we're really happy with it.
I wanted to play a Dawes song just a little bit, just to with the audience here. I think we could play it anyway, right? We could play a little bit, can't we?
Why don't you play a Joseph the Spouse song?
Yeah, why don't I do that? Hold on, that's a better idea.
Where did that name come from?
So Taylor,
yeah,
and I,
yeah, please interview him while I'm doing this.
Taylor and I were trying the song that I was just talking about. It's called Deaf Ears. If you're looking for songs to insert, Taylor and I had been trying to decide. He had been kind of consulting me. I obviously didn't have a band really. I didn't really feel like releasing the record under my own name. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like the music deserved a character, like it deserved a context outside of Chris Sullivan, the actor. I wanted people to come to it without that context. And so And so we had decided that maybe a moniker would be appropriate. And I was sitting in an Easter Sunday Catholic mass. I am not Catholic. My sister-in-law is. I love going to her church. She has this incredible Irish priest named Father Doney. And they started listing saints. And it went on for a long time, listing all the saints. And it was all the ones you know, St. Ignatius of Loyola, pray for us, all of these popular saints. And then they started getting into these more rare sounding saints. And one of them was Joseph the Spouse. And I didn't realize that Joseph of the Jesus, Mary, and Joseph had been canonized as a saint. Two, I didn't realize that he was identified for just being
a spouse.
A spouse. And I thought that's an incredible connotation for that character in literature.
It's just a cool, title. It just flows.
It's just a character Joseph in literature who is recognized for being a witness to a miracle.
Yeah.
And something about it struck me. And I don't know about you, Michael, but when I'm writing a song, I feel like the song is coming through me. It's not coming from me. And I feel like I am witnessing a miracle. Especially when I get together with other musicians and everyone starts collaborating, mm-hmm. and this song appears
when it comes together
out of nowhere.
Yeah, it just becomes something you couldn't imagine.
It is something out of nothing.
Yeah.
It is sound out of silence. And so Joseph the Spouse was this character who was this witness to a miracle. And that's how I feel about writing these songs. And
I always feel like when I write stuff, it, you know, I start mumbling things. And 80% of the words come from mumbles. And the idea is it's almost subconscious.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the first song Taylor and I wrote is called Deaf Ears.
Collectors always find my phone busy, 'cause it's been off the hook for 15 years. How much they want, I cannot pay. I don't have the moolah anyway. Yeah, all their calls are falling on deaf ears.
I mean, come on. It's honestly beautiful. How do you not listen to that and go, that's just a gorgeous song?
Thanks, man. I appreciate
Joseph the Spouse. What's the title of the album?
The album is called 6 Feet From Under.
6 Feet From Under. You got to listen to it. Please go to Spotify, go to iTunes, go to wherever you get your music. You're going to find it. This is Shit Talking with Chris Sullivan right now. These are rapid fire. These are from my patrons. Go to patreon.com/insideofyou if you want to join. I'll message you after. Nico P., are there any philanthropic organizations that are near and dear to you that you can share with us?
Yeah, I work pretty closely with a mental health organization called To Write Love on Her Arms that helps connect people with mental health services, counseling, crisis hotlines, people who are struggling with depression, suicide, any of those things. So I've done a lot of work with them.
And where can they go?
TWLOHA.com.
I like it. Emily S., what did it feel like to go back to the set of to film This Is Us?
Yeah, probably. She probably means after being in quarantine for so long. I mean, it was stressful. We were put in these giant plexiglass boxes, and there were all of these. We had a lot of testing. We got tested 3 times a week, Monday,
Your
Wednesday, Friday.
Your anxiety was up then, probably on set.
A little bit. But I also knew that we had all of the safety precautions in place. There were masks and shields and, you know, the only people without masks were the actors, and that was only happening, you know, between action and cut.
That would give me anxiety, always having to wear a mask. Yeah. I really always do. But now, you know, I'm vaxxed, but it's just being on set,
yeah,
where it's like, this is my work, this is, and wearing a mask the whole day and being having to go to your trailer.
It was a lot. But we as a cast, we're all on the same page. So that gave us all a good deal of confidence as far as, you know, staying quarantined, staying healthy,
right?
Staying, because it could have been a disaster,
and you didn't want to be the asshole that ruins it for everybody.
Seriously,
Dana asked if you had to have a theme song playing when you walked around, what would it be?
Obvious Child by Paul Simon.
Really?
Yeah, you know the song?
Yeah, I do know the song. I think mine would be It's a Mistake from Men at Work. I think my dad would say that. Leanne P., now that things are opening up a bit, what are you looking forward to doing mostly?
I am looking forward to traveling. We have Rachel and I have a bunch of family and close friends who we want to take Bear to meet. So we're going to be traveling pretty soon.
I'm going to come visit Bear.
Yeah. Come roll around in the backyard.
Oh, yeah. I'd love that, dude. I have to.
Yeah. You'll look into his eyes, Michael, and you'll see what I'm talking
about.
What
if you just kind of overhear me and I'm just holding him? I go, you're the most important thing ever to me. There's nothing else. It's Chris was right. Looking into your eyes, I know that you were the most.
It's not having a baby.
That's not your son. It's having that's not your kid.
This baby.
This is the child. Maya P., how has becoming a father changed you? You've pretty much said that. Yeah, you've pretty much
we've
said
covered
that. Mary B., Rosie is blessed to have you as a friend. What word of advice?
Amen.
What word of advice have you given him that you really wish he would take to heart?
I am blessed to have you as a friend, Rosie. Just so everybody's clear.
Oh, ditto.
A piece of advice? I mean, what advice could I give you? We live our lives as an example of. I try to live my life as an example of what I hope for the people around me. Not in specifics, not in, I hope everything happens the same way, but I try to deal with the difficult things head on, and I try to share the way that I've dealt with the difficult things with my friends as encouragement.
And you do it well.
To do the same.
You do it well. I would say ultimately, and it's just so cliche, but honestly, the one thing that I'm learning is you got to do whatever it takes to learn to love yourself. Mm-hmm. You've got to fucking do it. I have got to learn to just love myself and be the best person I could be. That's it. Just be grateful every day. Try to be grateful. Mm-hmm. I'm trying. These aren't, when I say this, this isn't me like, I'm grateful every day and I am, this is not me saying that. This is, I'd like to love myself more. I'd like to be more grateful. I want to do these things and I really am trying to do these things.
There will always be a balance and both things will always be true. And I have days when I really start to focus on the things that I lack.
Right.
And it's an awful fucking day. Mm. And a simple shift of perspective towards the things that I have and the blessings and the gratitudes that I have, both things exist. I lack things and I have everything I need. And it all depends on which wolf I feed. You know, do I feed the wolf of contentment or do I feed the wolf of fear? And whoever I throw scraps to gets stronger and gets louder. So, yeah.
Do you ever just like look at Bear and just tear up?
Yeah.
Like, I made this.
Almost. I told Rachel yesterday, I was like, this is the best. He's the best thing I've ever done. And I did almost nothing.
That's a line in a song right there. He's the best thing I've ever done.
He's the best thing I've ever
done. Like, it's almost ambiguous. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
He's the best thing I've ever
done. And I've tried hard to create wonderful things.
Yeah.
And he's the most wonderful thing that I've created.
Well, you're very important to me. This has been a blessing. I love having you here. It's been too long and we've never done the video so people can watch. They could listen. It's good to see you. I'm glad you're happy. I'm glad you got a whole nother season.
Yeah.
Here I am thinking you're canceled. You're done. You're like, no, we're filming 18 more episodes. So that wasn't exactly true. But thank you for sharing all this with me. I'm very happy for you and Rachel. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I love you, buddy. You're special to me.
You're special to me. Yeah. Well, we got that. That was a text message from me, you.
No, and it's what we talked about with Chris Hardwick.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to when you're talking to someone in person and just leave and going, all right, well, I'm going to go now. All right, well, dude, take care. Blah, blah, blah. So we just have a line that just like you say it and then you could fuck off. You just walk away. You're special to me. And then you just leave.
And then that's it.
That's it. Ryan, you're special to me.
Oh, I leave now.
Yeah,
no.
You leave. All right. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you, Chris.
Love you, buddy. Felt good.
Love you, man.
Felt good.
Felt great. All right. I love that man. I love him. I love him dearly. Sometimes you don't see people often enough, and then you see them, and it feels like yesterday. And it was beautiful having him in the studio and talking about having a child and talking about his life. And This Is Us and the last season. And it was always a joy, always a real joy having him around me. He's a good spirit, a good soul. I love his to be in his presence. So that's all I'll say about that. Like I said, COVID, no joke. I'm doing a little bit better. Just got some lingering effects and trying to, there was a little bit of fluid in the lung, in the left lung. And, but she wasn't concerned about that. And, but I was like, holy shit, man, you know, I'm pretty healthy. It doesn't matter. COVID, it's unpredictable. You could be perfectly healthy. It could be shit. When it hits you, you don't know how it's going to hit you till it hits you. So that's that. That's what happened to me. You've heard many stories. I'm one of the millions of stories you've probably heard. But all I would say is just get vaxxed. Why would doctors lie to you? Why would doctors who, since the beginning of time, have only tried to help you? I don't know. I feel I'm not going to get into it. We don't need to get into it. Just get vaxxed. Get vaxxed. Be safe. Be healthy. I don't want you to get sick. Hope you had a great week. Big shout out to my patrons. I love you guys. If you want to join Patreon and help the podcast in any way possible, patreon.com/insideofyou. And I hope you do that. I'll send you a message like I always do right after you join Patreon. We've got a lot of members. Some members get boxes sent to them from me and messages, and they get to ask the guest questions and Q&As with me and tons of other stuff. So if you're digging the podcast, you want to support it more, go to patreon.com/insideofyou. Also, if you want merch, you know what? Let's just skip some merch here. Let's do 15% off all merch. Why not? Wow, I never do 15% off. It's just called Rosie. We gotta come up with a good name here because I don't know if I could use that same name. Rosie is 15. How about that? R-O-S-E-Y-I-S 1-5. Rosie is 15. Rosie is 15. I'm gonna write that shit down. Rosie is 15% off everything in the Inside of You online store. There's journals, there's Lex Luthor pictures, there's Smallville lunch boxes, there's tumblers, there's mugs, Inside of You mugs, and tons of great stuff. So make sure you go there. And if you want any Sunspin merch, go to sunspin.com and you could book the band. You could book a Zoom with me. You could do so many things that you want to do. All you want to do is zoom, a zoom, a zoom, zoom in the boom, boom. I have nobody over here to laugh at my stupidity. Ryan's not here today, as you know. Let's read the top tier patrons who really give a lot to the show and make it possible. So let's do that. Nancy D, Leah S, Trisha, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Mama G, Nico P, Jerry W, Robert B, Jason W, Apothean, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Raj C, Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Jennifer N, Stacy L, Carly H, Jen S, Jamal F, Janelle B, Carrie B, Tabitha 272, not to be confused with Tabitha 273. Kimberly E, Mike E, Eldon Supremo, 99 More, Ramira, Santiago M, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne P, Janine R, Ray A, Maya P, Maddie S, Shannon D, Matt W, Belinda N, Kevin V, James R, Chris H, Dave H, Samantha S, Spider-Man Chase, Sheila G, Brad D, Ray H, hi Ray H, hi Tabitha T, Tom N, Suzanne B, Liliana A, Michelle K, Hannah B, Michael S, Talia M, Betsy D, Claire M, Liz J, Laura L, Chad L, Rochelle, Nathan E, Marion E, Meg K, Janelle P, Trav N, Dan N, Diane R. Last list right now. Here we go. And I can't bank off Ryan right now. I can't ask him, you know, what their last name is. Ojeda. Did I say that wrong? I know it's something else, isn't it? She could yell at me later. Ojeda. Lorraine G, Veronica K, Big Stevie W, Kendall T, Carol D, Sandy B, Angel M, Eric C, Rhiannon C, Stephen M, Corey K, Super Sam, Emily C, Sherry S, Coleman G, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Liz L, Jeremy C, Andy T, Cody R, Chris E, Sebastian K, Gavinator, Ann H, David C, Elliot M, John B, Brandy D, Yavor R, and Bono or Bano. So there it is. Thank you for listening today. I love you all very dearly. And thanks for all the get well wishes. It's been crazy, man. Little back surgery and then it got COVID. Hopefully there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I hope you all have a sensational week. Make sure you come to the Stage It this coming Saturday, 2 p.m. 6 p.m. Two shows. You can get tickets at sunspin.com or Stage It. And make sure you go to the Inside EU online store for 15% off. Rosie is 15 is the code. Rosie is 15 for 15% off everything in the store. You're dynamite. Thank you so much. And all my love to everybody. See you later. From Michael Rosenbaum, alone in the Hollywood Hills without Ryan Tejas. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you, and I hope you have a glorious, glorious day.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.